We're holding in the middle of Tesdaya Amud Aleph. We're holding in the middle of Tesdaya Amud Aleph. We are a little bit behind, so we'll have to see what we can do to catch up. We left off yesterday. Yeah, we're in the middle of Tesdaya Amud Aleph. We left off yesterday in the middle of the story where Haman has just given Mordechai a haircut and a bath and gotten him ready to go ride on the horse. So we're in the middle of Tesdaya Amud Aleph. You have two lines over there between the end of Rashi and the beginning of Tosfos. We're on the second of those lines. Martel's boss said to Shaklinu Lamazye, after Haman had cut Mordechai's hair, Lavshinu Lamone, he dresses him in the clothes of the king, Amalei, and he tells Mordechai, Sako Rechav, get up and ride on the horse. Amalei, lo yachilna, Mordechai tells him, I can't. I'm weak, my strength is weak from the 3 days of fasting. Gosin Vesalik. So Haman has to follow the king's orders. He has to have Mordechai ride on the horse. So he bent down on the ground so Mordechai could climb up. He Solik as Mordechai is climbing up. He gave Haman a kick. Amalei, Haman says, what are you doing? Like Zivlechu, doesn't it say in your scriptures, in your Tanakh, it says, Binfal Oichal Tismach, when your enemy is falling, don't rejoice. Or you seem to be taking a great pleasure in my humiliation. Amalei, so Mordechai tells him, Hani Mili Bisrael. That's talking about a Jewish enemy. But when it comes to you guys, see, the Pasuk says, you will tread on their high places. And in fact, Rashi says on the Pasuk over there that there was a, besides our example with Mordechai and Haman, Rashi doesn't quote it over there, but Rashi quotes a case from Sefer Yeshua, where after they had at one point five kings from different parts of Israel, five tiny kings, had gotten together in a coalition to attack the Jewish people, and the Jews ended up defeating them. They found that these kings went and hid in a cave. They find them in the cave over there, and they bring them out, and then Yeshua, the Ebeshah tells Yeshua, put your foot on the necks of these five kings to show that you've completely subjugated them, and then they hang them. So the same thing, you know. Yeah. So Mordechai is telling Haman the same thing over here. You know, when you're talking a Goyish enemy has been defeated, no, you tread on them and maybe even give him a kick.
And you hang them.
Yeah. Well, he didn't say that, but yeah. Continue the pasuk. Vayikru lefanav. Haman calls out in front of Mordechai. Kocha yasa leish Hashem alachafet bikarei. So it should be done to the man. The king wants to honor him. So as he's holding the reins and walking along the street where Haman lived, his daughter looked out the window. Haman's daughter, Dekaima Igra, she was standing on the roof, watching the procession. Savra, and she thought, the one who's riding on the horse is her father. And the one who's walking in front of him is Mordechai. She didn't see it. It's too far away or whatever. She never would have thought that her father was going to be in such a state. So she took a chamber pot, and she threw it on her father's head. And one of the Mepharshim says, thinking it's Mordechai, obviously, right. One of the Mepharshim says that actually we find the Medrash says that many years earlier, when Ahasuerus had done his beauty contest to find a new queen, Haman figured, you know what, let me get my daughter in there. That's what we learned a few days ago, that was part of his idea in recommending that Vashti should be executed. He figured now he'll have an in over here. So what happens, though? The Medrash says that he brought his daughter. She ended up coming down with a bad case of stomach trouble, a bad case of diarrhea, and of course they didn't want to have anything to do with her in the palace. They kicked her out of the contest. All these years later, she's still suffering from it. Therefore, she has a chamber pot there at all times, and therefore it's available for this kind of thing. Dolly, he lifted up his eyes. V'chazis davru, who she saw, it's my father. Nafla me'igra la'ara, so she threw herself off the roof onto the ground. Umeisa, and she died. This is what it says in the pasuk. Vayoshev Mordechai al Shara Melech. The Mordechai returned to the king's gate. What does that mean here? The Omer of Sheshav l'Sakir l'Hanisai. Mordechai, even after the whole procession and everything, he returned to his sackcloth and his fasting. Because very nice, I've been rewarded for what I did for the king many years ago. The Jews are still in danger, so therefore he went back to that. Actually, there is the Rashi over here describes that this was actually the third day of the fast. We talked about this briefly yesterday. Rashi holds the 3 days of fasting that Esther had told Mordechai to declare were Yudal, Tetzvav, and Tetzayin Nissan. The Gzeda had been made on Yud Gimel. Esther tells them that day she and Mordechai are passing back and forth messages. She tells them you have to have the Jews fast for 3 days. The 3 days begin that night or the next morning or whatever. Your Dalet Erev Pesach and the first 2 days of Pesach. This procession that we're talking about happened on the second day of Pesach. That later that day, Haman was hanged. So therefore, according to that, then it's still very much in the middle of the fast. And so Mordechai returns to his fasting. There are other Mepharshim who learn differently. There are other Mepharshim who learn that actually the 3 days of fasting began on that very day of the Gzeira. So it was the 13th, 14th, and 15th of Nisan, which means by the time of this parade, the official fast for the Jewish people is over. Nevertheless, as we learned yesterday, and as we're learning now, Mordechai and his people, the kids who were with him, etc., continued to fast and continued to daven, even though you're not going to make the whole people fast for more than 3 days. You can't be matriarch on them more than that. But we, the Yechidim, are going to continue until the Gzeira is possible. That's why he's continuing fasting. Yeah, it's similar to what we had in Tainus, that even after you go to 13 Tanias on the Tzibur, if rain still hasn't fallen, the Yechidim, the Talmid Chachamim, continue fasting privately.
Why do the other questions say it's answered on the?
I forget what their source for it is. Part of the idea may be that we assume they started fasting that very day of the Gzeira. Why should they wait till the next day? But also, there are. I mean, for example, by the second party, it says that Haman and Achashverosh came to drink with Esther Hamalka, which implies she's already able to drink. If it was Tzayin Nissen, how is she? She's still fasting. Yeah. Whatever. There's different ways of looking at it. Yeah. And anyway, the pasuk continues. But Haman nidchaf al beis. Haman was pushed towards his house, although b'chafui rosh. In mourning and with his head covered. So why the double expression? Avil albito, he's in mourning for his daughter because she died. And with his head covered because he's upset. He's depressed over what happened to him.
So nothing happened to him.
He got a whole chamber pot thrown on his head. Yeah, and he got humiliated, and he ended up having to bathe Mordechai, etc. Yeah, you know, he wasn't having a good day, basically. Yeah. So that's the chafurosh. Yeah, I saw, by the way, an interesting thing. I saw an interesting thing, by the way, in one of the Mepharshim on Ein Yaakov when we said yesterday that Haman was correct, saying, now I have to be a barber, and Mordechai told him, you were a barber for many years. What's the bar? We learned in Shabbos that people have a mazel. Depending on the mazel, a person is born under, they'll have certain tendencies. We discussed their Yesh Mazel Yisrael, Ein Mazel Yisrael, whatever. For Goyim, they certainly have Mazel. So Haman is arguing like this. He's saying, Ochen Vey to me. You know, I was born under Mazel Madim. So by nature, I'm a bloodthirsty person. So therefore, I have no choice but to be attacking the Jewish people and trying to kill them. It's the Mazel I was born under. And now I have to become a barber. Like, and Mordechai tells him, you're Russia. You were meant to be a barber all along. You could have lived out your life being a barber and bloodletter and surgeon, which is what they did in those days. And you'd be Mekayim what you're doing for your Mazel that way. You chose to become a Russia and harass the Jewish people. Don't pretend that it's your Mazel. Yeah.
Who says that?
One of the first men in Yaakov quotes it, yeah. Anyway, continues the Megillah by Sapra Haman Lazeresh Ishtar Lachaloya Bavagam. Haman tells over to Zeresh and to all his friends what happened. Now, the pasuk starts by calling them Oyavav, which means his friends. Then it continues by Yemele Chachamav. So, what is it? Are they his friends or are they Chachamim? Karilu Oyavav or Karilu Chachamav. Anybody who says a word of Chachma, even from among the Goyim, can be called a Chacham. So even though these guys maybe were not such great Chachamim, but they came up with an important point, as the Gemara is going to say now, and therefore they deserve to be called Chachamim. What did they say? They said, "Im mizera Yehudim Mordechai v'gomer," that if Mordechai is from the seed of the Jewish people, now they can't mean at face value if Mordechai is a Jew. What do you mean? Everybody knew all the time Mordechai is a Jew. He gave Lahem Ashur Yehudi. He walked around proudly as a Jew. He wasn't bound to Haman because he's a Jew. If he's from the Jews, then you're going to continue from. So it means like this. Omrulei, they said to him, "Im ishar shvatim kalti," similar, but not just Yehudim, but a couple of other shvatim. If he comes from one of the other shvatim, fine, you'll be able to conquer him. But if he's one from one of the following four Shvatim, Yehuda, Binyamin, Ephraim, and Menashe, lo yachlasle, then you will not be able to overcome him. You're gonna end up falling for him.
His wife.
No, his friends tell him that. His wife also. Why these four shvatim? Yehuda d'chtiv yad chaba oref aivecha. Yehuda says your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. You'll be able to overpower them. And the other three, inach d'chtiv behu, the pasuk says, in Tillim, lefnei Ephraim, Binyamin, and Menashe, oref gvuratecha. In front of Ephraim and Binyamin and Menashe, you should, they were asking the Eivishter, arouse your gvura. So they have a special sort of gvura to be able to defeat the enemies of the Jewish people. And they told him, Kinafel Tipol Lefanav, they said, you were falling before him. Darash Yehuda Bariloi, Shtein Afilus Alololama, why the double expression falling? Amrloi, because they told him, Umazu Meshulu La'afu Meshulu La'kechavim. This nation, the Jewish people, are compared to dust, and they're compared to the stars, the Kisayef Yashmael Leroy, from this week's parasha. Shein Yodin, Yodin Ad'afu. When they go down all the way to the dust, like they've been up until now. But when they go up, they go all the way up to the stars. In other words, there's no in between for the Jewish people. So therefore, they're telling him, you're definitely going to have a total downfall. Basically, there's no way. You know, it's not going to be somewhere in between. Like, you know, they're going to end up in some medium situation, and you'll also end up in equilibrium with them. If they're going up, you're going down. Yeah. Actually, one of the Mefarshim on in Yaakov quotes also, I think A.C. Yosef says this, that they're also advising him, it's also a piece of advice they're giving him. They're telling him, Kinafel Tipol Lefanav, go fall down on the floor in front of him and ask him for Mechila. Maybe he'll have Rachmanis on you. And before he had a chance to do that, they come and hurry him to come to the next party.
Also, would that have elements today with Jewish people rising up, so then the non-Jews also would be falling down?
Yep. And the pasuk continues, Sarisi Amelech Igihu, as they're talking, the servants of the king came, Vayavhilu, and they hurried him. Malamet Sheviyu, Bebehola, this teaches us that they brought him in a panic. Rashi says it means he didn't even have a chance to wash off from the filth that had been thrown on him. Marsha says that's why the word is Vayavhilu. Bebehola means that he's terrified. He's terror-stricken, realizing, wait a minute, I'm being brought to the king, and I'm still filthy. Yeah. So at the second party, Esther says, "Kinim kan rani va'ami v'gomer, me and my people have been sold to be destroyed." And she says, "Ki einat so shoyve b'nezek ha'melech." This enemy, this troublemaker is not even worth it to the king's loss. What does that mean? Amrloi, she says to him, "Tsar ze einat shoyve b'nezek ha'melech." This tsar is not even worthwhile the damage that he's caused to the king so far. Think of what he did. He was jealous of Vashti and he got her killed many years ago. Now he's jealous of me, or Boril Mifili, and he wants to kill me. But he doesn't even care if what he's doing is going to end up harming you.
It's directly mirroring what Haman said about this situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he shot and it's covered.
Yeah. So, Vayomer HaMelech Achashverosh, Vayomer LaEsther HaMalka, it says, Achashverosh said, and he said to Esther HaMalka, Vayomer, Vayomer Lomeli, why the double expression, Vayomer? Amar Rababo, with Chila Aide Churgumon, originally he was speaking through an interpreter. I was like, beneath his dignity, you know what nation she's from, as far as he knows, you know, she's a baby found, you know, found in the subway station or whatever and adopted, you know, she, you know, so it's not, you know, the king is you know, it, when you speak to a low-down person like that, but you speak to them through an interpreter, through a third party.
They say that he, not that they didn't know, but in those days,
No, but we're not even talking about a Jew. We're not even talking about a Jew. He didn't know what nation she's from. She thought she's beneath his dignity. She's on a lower level than him. I'm not going to speak to her directly.
She
kept the secret.
As an adult, she would have to identify with him.
Okay, whatever. No. Well, you could ask her, Amoves Meladka. She didn't tell who she's born from either. No. All they knew is she'd been raised by Mordechai. As far as they knew, he had found her on a subway platform. Yeah. No. Kivin de Omer Lemid Beis Shaul Kasina. Once she tells him that actually I'm descended from royalty. I'm descended from Shaul, from Shaul HaMelech, no less. Yeah. By Yom Esther Maka. Go away, interpreter. I'll speak to Esther directly. She's my equal. She's my social equal. Next, Vatayim Esther Ishta Va'oyev Haman Haraz. Why the long expression? And why all the build-up to it? Ishta Va'oyev Haman Haraz. Why all the preamble? Who? Mihu Tzeve Ezehu Haman. What's all the preamble? Amar Abulazim, Malama Chayitz Mechava Tlap Achashverosh, it teaches us that she was actually pointing towards Achashverosh. When she started saying, Ish Tzava Oyev, she started pointing to Achashverosh, you're the Tzava Oyev. But a malach came and slapped her hand and pointed it towards Haman. Because otherwise, of course, she'd be endangering herself. Yeah. Mephoshim talk about, why would she even think to do such a thing? And there's a lot of different answers. One is, she's a truthful person. Yeah, Achashverosh really is the troublemaker over here. It's like she can't hold herself back from pointing that out.
She seems to be saying, really, the source of trouble is Achashverosh.
It's Achashverosh, right. Some Mephoshim say that she meant to say, in other words, it's kind of all of this is your fault. You're the one who promoted him. And there's other explanations also that not necessarily was she pointing to him like to say, you're the Ish Tzava Oyev, but like pointing to him, you should know, he's not just my enemy, he's your enemy too. He's meaning again, but the Malach didn't want that her gesture should be misinterpreted, so he pushed her hand towards someone. Anyway, yeah. Next, Vamelach Kambachamasev Vemer, the Megillah continues that the king got up in anger. And the next pasuk, Vamelach Shav Meginas Habisan, the king returned from the palace garden.
He was angry at Haman.
Makish Shiva. So the pasuk is comparing the returning to the anger. Makima b'chema. When he got up, the pasuk says he was angry. Akshiva b'chema. When he returned, he was also angry. He hadn't calmed down. He had gone out to the garden intending maybe to cool off. But we see the pasuk is implying that when he came back, he was still just as angry. What happened to all the Ashtachal Malach HaSharis, the Idmulu Lake of Gabri? He found a bunch of Malachim who were disguised as people, and they're uprooting or cutting down the trees in the garden. He says, Ma'ayu Gaihu, what are you doing? Amrulay, they told him to Tachdin and Haman. Haman ordered us to do that. So now he's really angry at Haman.
That's true.
So Mepharshim say, actually, in a way, it was true. Haman was scheming to uproot the Jewish people, who are compared to trees.
But not in the garden.
Not in the garden of Achashverosh, but still.
So the
Ebush obviously sent them.
Yeah.
After the base, now he walks back into the palace, and what does he find over there? Haman Nofal Alamita. Haman is falling on the bed. And the question is, Nofal, what do you mean falling, implying like he keeps on falling? Nofal, anybody should say he fell on the bed. And Bapashas, you only fall once. No, Amar Balazam, Malamach, Malach, Pilayalah. It means that a Malach came and then threw him down. Every time Haman is trying to get up, and a Malach is pushing him back down. So Achashverosh still sees when he comes back in. He sees Haman. It looks like Haman is trying to attack Achashverosh. It's trying to attack Esther. Yeah. Amar. So now he's really angry. Amar. Vaymi Besa, Vaymi Bara. Woe is inside. Woe is outside. Wherever I go, Haman is causing trouble. And thus the Vay Yomer Hamelach. Vay, he says Vay, there's Och and Vay everywhere. Yeah. Vay Yomer Hamelach. The king says, Hagam Lichbish Samaki Imi Babayas. Is he even going to try and attack the queen in my house, with me in the house? And the pasuk continues, Vay Yomer Chavona. All of a sudden, Chavona speaks up. You should know Haman also has a gallows ready to hang Mordechai. Amra Blaza, a Chavona Rosha Ba'oitza Eitzahaya. Actually, Chavona, the Rosha, was also involved in that plot to begin with. How do we know? Because otherwise, how did he know, B'chalal, that Haman has his gallows and that's meant to hang Mordechai? How would he know unless he was in on it? Okay, maybe you could see the gallows. How did he know it's meant to hang Mordechai? Yeah. So, exactly. Kivin Shirosh, and his Kaima Atsasa, as soon as he saw that his plan is falling apart, Miyad Barach, and immediately he turned turncoat. Yeah, he turned around. He immediately ran away. Thus the pasuk says, Vayashlich Olav Lo Yachmo, the Eibush throws a punishment on the Rosha without having Rachmanas on him, and Miyad Baroyach Rivrach, and from his hand, meaning from his group, they run away. Like all of his cronies immediately, they see which way the wind is blowing, and they right away turn around. Mind you, we say in Shoshanat Yaakov, even with all that, we say Vegam Chavona Zochor Latov, because even if he was doing it for his own self-serving reasons, still he said the right thing at the right time. Because actually, it's a very important thing. If not for that, if not for Chavona speaking up, maybe Haman still has a shot at it. Maybe he can still, he's a smooth talker after all. He can manage to find an Esther to get back into the king. It wasn't my fault, etc. Yeah, like this, when Chavona speaks up exactly at the right time, then yeah, that feels things. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And the pasuk says, after Haman was hanged, b'chamach hamelach shochoch. Now, usually in Torah, whenever you have the shorosh shin chof, which means to calm down, it's usually always with one chof. Vayashoku hamoyim from the Mabul, in other places, you have the word is always shochoch or whatever, or something like that with one chof. Shtei shchiches halololamo. Here we have a double chof. So why the double expression? Why the double chof? It means, number one, the anger of the Edish at the Jewish people, that now finally the issue, whatever it was, the Selim of Nebuchadnezzar or the Nenu Mitzvah Shalei Shadosh had been taken care of. V'achas shal Achashverosh, and one, that Achashverosh was angry about what Haman was trying to do. V'amri lo, or another version, achas shal Esther, v'achas shal Vashti. The two angers that will calm down is both of them are Achashverosh's own anger. One, that he's angry at Haman now for trying to attack Esther, and two, that he's been angry at him all these years for causing Vashti to be killed. He held it against him all these years. Now he finally calmed down on both of those things, and therefore shachacha. Now the Gemara is going to bring in something which
Loves
that. Apparently. Now the Gemara is going to go off onto a bit of a tangent, which actually is going to end up relating to something from the Megillah, where we have afterwards about Mordechai coming out b'lehush malchus. The pasuk says the pasuk tells after Yosef had his reunion with his brothers, he sends them home with food for Yaakov, he tells them bring Yaakov back here, etc. And the pasuk says the last thing, l'chulam nasam l'ish chalifei smolot, to each of them he gave a suit of clothes, a change of clothes. Well, Binyamin nasam chamish chalifei. In Binyamin it says he gave 300 silver coins and five changes of clothes.
That's what
the Chumash says. Now the question is, Epsha, Javash, and Sarva, Yosef, Tzadik, how is it possible that this very thing, that this Tzadik himself, Yosef, suffered from, Yikoshabai, that he himself is stumbling in it? In other words, Yosef seems to be repeating the same mistake that Yaakov repeated, that Yaakov made all those years ago. What mistake was that? Bishvil Mishkal, Shtei Sloyim Milas, because of the weight of two Sloyim of fine wool, Shahosif Yaakov and Yosef, Mishar Echav, which Yosef gave more to his brother, to Yosef, which Yaakov gave to Yosef over his brothers, because of that. And they were jealous of him. This Galgal Adover, matters one thing led to another. Yod Rabbi Seinu Mitzrayim, and our ancestors ended up coming down to Mitzrayim. So it all started with Yaakov showing Yosef favoritism. That he gave him the Ksonis Pasid. What does it mean, Shtei Sloyim? So Rashi on Shabbos, where this Gemara also is, says not necessarily literally Shtei Sloyim. It's not necessarily, the whole coat can't possibly have weighed only two Sloyim. It's only a couple of ounces. So it means, you know, it's an expression, meaning like a very small amount. Although Rashi gives another possibility over there that maybe when we say Ksonis Pasim doesn't mean it was a regular coat, but it had extra special material around the sleeve. So yes, that extra material around the sleeve could be two Sloyim. It could be
a measure of weight.
A Sloyim is a measure of weight. It's about four-fifths of an ounce. So yeah, you're talking like an ounce and a half extra of material, yeah. Whatever it is, so now Yosef seems to be making the same mistake over again. He's giving Binyamin five suits and only one to each of the other brothers. Amar Binyamin by Yafet, what it was is Remez Ramaz Lo. Yosef is actually giving Binyamin a Remez. Shaosit ben losis mimenu, there's going to be in the future a descendant coming from him, which is Mordechai, sheyetzi milfenei melech v'chamisha levushei malchus, who will come out from before the king wearing five royal clothes. Shenemar, Mordechai yotze b'levush malchus, the pasuk lists five things, tcheles, v'chur, v'ateres zahav gola, v'sachris butz, v'argomon. So five things. So therefore he gave Binyamin five suits. Now before Hashem says, so how does that help? Okay, what, you know, so the brothers aren't going to be jealous of Binyamin because they realize he's hinting at something that's going to happen 1,000 years from now. So they say, you know, you could answer, they give the suits that he gave Binyamin were lower quality. He gave him five suits that are equal in value to one suit that he gave each of the other, brothers.
What kind of imagination is
regular clothes. Yeah. The Mefarshim say actually the reason why he wanted to give them each a suit is because earlier when he had accused them of stealing the cup and they found it in Yom's bag of the puzzle, they vayikrus and loisim, they all ripped their clothes. So to make up for that, so they now have fresh clothing, to make up for that he gave them each clothing. So what he did is he gave Binyamin, and according to this he gave him five suits. Five cheaper suits, which add up to the same value as all the other ones. So therefore, they're not going to be jealous that he got more than them. As far as so why is he giving him five cheap ones instead of one expensive one to represent the Mordechai's five clothes? The pasuk also says that he gave Binyamin 300 silver coins. 300, so Mefarshim asked, what about that also? How is it, you know, why is he worried the other brothers are going to be jealous of Binyamin for that? Different answers. One interesting one is. The Gemara in Gittin discusses a case if you have an Eved who was owned by a Jew and then you sell him to a Goy, which you're not supposed to do. Once he's an Eved Kanani, he's Chayiv in Mitzvah. So when you sell him to a Goy, that takes him away from that. you're obligated to buy him back from the goy for up to 10 times his value. Now, the Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim that the rate, the value of a slave, and the average value of a slave in those days was 30 shekels. That's why it says that if an ox gores somebody's slave, Eved Yigach Asher Ama, then the fixed amount of the Torah says you pay 30 shekels. So that's the average value of a slave. So therefore, to buy him, so they sold him to the goyim, they sold him to the Arab, so they're each obligated to pay 300 shekels to him. Instead, what he does is, instead of taking that from them, he gives it to Binyamin. He doesn't give it to them. Effectively, each of them has lost 300 shekel as a snap, sort of. Yeah, well, except Binyamin wasn't involved in the sale, yeah. Right. Next, speaking of Yosef's reunion with his brothers, the pasuk says, a few psukim earlier, Vayipo al Sadre Binyamin Asib, that he fell on the necks of his brother Binyamin. What do you mean? Next, Kama Tzavar and Havalel Binyamin. How many necks did he have? Now Rashi says, I don't like that Gersa in the Gemara. Rashi says, what do you mean? How many necks did he have? The normal way the Torah speaks of a neck. The normal way the Torah speaks of a neck is Tzavarei in the plural. The Marsha says, nevertheless, though we find the word Tzavarei in Tanakh in a few places. It means just the opposite. We find the word Tzavara, fine, just like the word Baal Love, which means his owner, even though it's in plural form, even though it's singular. But you never find the word savarei meaning anything other than necks, plurals. The question's still valid. How many? Why? What do you mean? How many necks does Binyamin have? It means, Amar Abulazar, Bracha al shnei mikdashim shasidin liyas b'chelka shem Binyamin, that Yosef is crying about the two batei mikdash, that in the future are going to be in the territory of Binyamin, the first and second batei mikdash, v'asidin lecharev, which are in the end are going to be destroyed. Or Binyamin bracha al tzavarev, and then the passage continues that Binyamin cried on Yosef's neck. This is al Mishkan Shiloh, who's crying about Mishkan Shiloh, which is going to be in the chelik of Yosef. Shiloh is in Yosef's territory, but also lecharev, and it's destined to be destroyed. So why? He's crying because it's going to be destroyed. Some of Farshim talk about the idea. It's explained in a number of places in Siddur that the Beit Mikdash is compared to a neck because it's the conduit through which Elikos comes into our world. You have Elikos is like the head. You have the world, the Lamasa is like the body, and the neck is what connects them. The Beis Mikdash is that neck that connects the head to the body, that connects the gashmius and rochnius. Yes. The Rebbe also mentioned something else over here. So what are we seeing? That Yosef is crying over Binyamin's Batei Mikdash, and Binyamin is crying over Yosef's Batei Mikdash. Each of them is not crying over their own. Why? The Rebbe said, because your own Batei Mikdash is being destroyed. Don't cry about it. Get up and do something. Mashenkin, the other person's Beis Mikdash, you may not be in a position to do anything about it. You taka should cry over it, you should commiserate with them. But if it's your own, you have no business crying, you got work to do. Yeah, but still, you know, each of these things was destroyed because of a cause, so yeah. And Mephoshim also say the reason why they're crying about it now, one idea is because the whole story, how did Yosef, you know, Yosef ended up getting estranged from his brothers and sold, etc., was all a matter of sinas chinam. The second Beis Mikdash was destroyed because of sinas chinam, and to a lesser extent the other Batei Mikdash also. So like now, they're seeing into the future what sinas chinam in the future is going to cause, and therefore they're crying over it now. Then the pasuk says, a few pesukim earlier, v'hine en eichem royes, after Yosef tells his brothers who he really is, and I don't hold it against you, etc., he says, v'hine en eichem royes, behold, your eyes see, the ene achi Binyamin, and the eyes of my brother Binyamin. What does that mean? Amar Abulazar, Amar Lahem, k'shem she'en b'libi al Binyamin achi, just as you know, obviously, I don't hold anything against Binyamin, sh'lo'hoi b'mchirasi, he wasn't involved in selling me, k'achem b'libi aleichem, thus the same thing, I don't hold it against you either. That's why I'm comparing you to Binyamin.
It's a theory in the word. He's not holding anything against Binyamin because he didn't do anything.
No, no, no. Obviously, I'm not holding anything against Binyamin because he wasn't even involved.
So that means the other one, he does.
No. He's saying like this. There's no question that I don't hold anything against Binyamin. That's obvious. I don't even need to say that. The same way I don't hold it against you. Even though you did sell me, I don't hold it against you. And he continues, Kipi Hamadabar Aleichem, that it is my mouth speaking to you, which means Kipi Kain Libi. What I'm saying with my mouth is exactly what I feel in my heart. I'm not a hypocrite. I'm not an echabalevnik. Then the pasuk continues when he's sending them home with food. Well, Aviv Shalach Kizois, he sent to his father as follows: Asara Chamorim Noisim Mitur Mitzrayim, ten donkeys, or actually Rashi says over there it means 10 donkey loads, actually whatever, carrying the best of Mitzrayim. My mitur Mitzrayim, Amr Binyamin by Yafis, Amr Blaza, Shalakla Yayin Yashan, he sent Yaakov old wine, Shadaskinim Nochemenu, that old people are calmed down by it. It makes them feel good. That's the truth of Mitzrayim. The Rebbe talked about it in a sicha once. They explain on the Rashi on this that where Rashi does an unusual thing over there. Rashi says Matzinu b'Gemara, that it means Yayin Yashan. Like, why does Rashi have to say Matzinu b'Gemara? Usually, he doesn't quote his sources. The gist of it is that Rebbe explains because according to Pshuta Shel Mikra, why would you think Tur Mitzrayim means wine? There's plenty of wine in Eretz Yisrael. If anything, Mitzrayim is better known for other kinds of products. Matzinu b'Gemara, okay, we find it in the Gemara. That was wine. And the Rebbe explains the deeper idea of it is that that Yosef was sending Yaakov a message that all these years I hadn't been drinking wine because I've been separated from my family, but I put aside wine knowing that one day we're going to be reunited, so by now it's old wine, and I'm sending you it to show you that I never gave up hope all these years.
Where did they grow wine in Mitzrayim?
I don't know, I guess they grew grapes there, why not?
There's no mention of
lots of things. I don't know.
Why did you do all these things for letter? Why not just write him a letter?
It's possible that. It's also possible that, you know, I mean, sometimes you have something that can't be put into words. Oh, you see it's a machshava, like, so you put it here. Next, the pasuk continues. Much later on in Parshas Vayechi, after Yaakov has passed away, the pasuk says, "Vayechu gam echav." His brothers also came. Vayiplu lufanav, and they fell down before him. Vayomru, and they fell down before him because they're nervous about now. Yaakov has passed away. Now maybe Yosef is going to take the chance and take revenge. Why they're falling down in front of him? Amar Rabbi Yamin by Yefes, Amar Rabbi Loza, Hainu Damri Inshi. This is like what people say. Tala the idna sagidle, a fox, which is one of the lower down animals, so a low down animal, b'idne, in his time, in other words, when he's having a good time, sagidle, you should bow down to him. So the same way, like the brothers are bowing down to Yosef. That's what I mean, tala. My b'tzurusim achva. How is he lower than his brothers? How does he deserve to be compared to a fox, compared to them? Ella ishmahachi. So no, rather we have to refer this statement to a different case where somebody bowed to Yosef. And the pasuk says, "Vayishtachu Yisrael arosh hamita," that Yisrael, meaning Yaakov, bowed down at the head of the bed after Yosef had promised that he'll take him and bury him in the Maris Machpelah. On that, Amar Rabbi Yamin by Yefes, Amar Rabbi Loza, Talib Eid Masagidle. Here you can call him a fox. Yosef is not on the level of Yaakov, but the fact that Yaakov is bowing down to Yosef, that's because, you know, he's still right now he's a leader, and therefore you have to show him derech eretz. Next, the pasuk says over there, after the brothers fall down in front of Yosef, hinenu l'chol avadim, and Yosef tells them, "Don't worry, hatachas alekim ani." And pasuk says, "Vayinachem oisim," he comforted them, "Vayidaber al libam," and he spoke to their hearts. What's the double expression? Amar Rabbi Yamin v'yefes, Amar Rabbi Loza, melamed sh'amal hem dvorim sh'miskablin al alev. This means that he told them something that's acceptable by the heart. In other words, he told them a very logical thing. He says, like 10 candles couldn't put out one candle. He's comparing all the shmatim to candles. The 10 of you couldn't put me out. And how could one candle put out 10? There's no possibility even that I could possibly harm you.
What is the relevance to us?
Because we brought in over here about Mordechai's five clothes, So because of that, we're dashing a number of other things relating to Yosef and the brothers. But Pashkus, it's also because all of these things, one after the other, is either Rabbi Lazar directly saying it, or Rabbi Yamin by Yefes saying it in the name of Rabbi Lazar, and the Gemara does that a lot of times. It'll put things together from the same Amor would have said.
If Rabbi Rashi, if he says that's not even in Gemara, and the Gemara comes and cites all the events.
Going back now to the Megillah, Yehudim ha'isa oira v'simcha v'sasin v'ikar, famous thing, Amr of Yehuda, oira zu toira, the word oira means toira, v'cheinu oima ki ne mitzvah v'toira oira, as it says, the mitzvah is a candle, and toira is light. Simcha is the yamtiv, v'cheinu oima v'samachta v'chagecha, you should be happy in your yamtivim. Sasin zu mila, the word sasin refers to mila, v'cheinu oima sasin eichei ala masecha. David HaMelech says, I'm happy over your word. How does Imra Secha specifically refer to Bris Mila? So Rashi says, because first of all, it's introduced with the word Vayomer Hashem al Abraham, not like many other mitzvahs are introduced with the Vayidaber. Also, Rashi says, we find that David HaMelech was particularly happy about it. The famous story where one time David went into the bathhouse and then is thinking to himself, wait a minute, I don't have any mitzvah, I'm naked of mitzvahs. Until he realizes he has a Bris Mila, and then he comes out and composes the Kapitel HaMaseach HaLashminis in honor of Bris Mila that takes place on the eighth day, which a Yid always has that with him. So therefore, he's particularly happy, Ali Mersecha, about your word. The Korah, I think there's another explanation also, I don't remember who says, that another reason why Mila is called Imrafsecha is because at that point in Avraham's life, when he was given the mitzvah of Bris Mila, that is the only mitzvah he has. It's Imrafsecha in the singular, the one Imra that the Eved told him.
That's the only one.
That's the only one, directly. That's the only mitzvah the Eved told him, directly, yeah. Next, the Kar Eilat Tefillin, V'cheinu Oimer V'roh Kolayim Ha'aretz K'shem Hashem Nikra Alecha V'yarev Mecca. All the nations of the world will see that the name of Hashem is called on you and they will fear you. V'tanya Rav Elazar God V'lam Eilat Tefillin Shabarosh. So we see that the Tefillin Shabarosh calls up the Goyim honor of the Jewish people. Why are we singling out these four? So there's different possibilities. One, some of Farshim say, Rashi says over here actually, that Haman had been gozer on these four specific things. Because these four things are the special things of the Jewish people, as we had in Rosh Hashanah and Tainus, whenever Tfilin, Mila, Yom Tovim, and Torah. So therefore, Haman wanted to take those away from the Jewish people. So therefore, now they had them back. There's also an idea. Marsha says each of these things we find actually right there in the Megillah. Torah, you have the very very fact that Megillah Esther was written and became part of Tanakh. Yom Tov, Purim. Mila, Verdav and Ma'am are Miskadim, that many of the Goyim were wanted to become Jews, and they have to become a Jew, they have to have Brit Mila. And the Kara is the Tefillin, if we see that many of the people are all afraid of the Jews now, and we say over here, when are the Goyim afraid of us when we wear Tefillin? One thing it talks about in a few places in Chassidus, why the word Oira over here? Why not Ur? So one idea is that Oira represents specifically Torah Shabbat Peh. Which Haman was specifically out against Torah Shabbat Peh, and that everyone explains in a mimer that the gist of it is that Torah Shabbat Sav, you start out with logic, right? No, Torah Shabbat Sav basically you have to accept Be'emunah. The Eved said it, and it was written down. Torah Shabbat Peh, you start with logic. The Torah Shabbat Peh is all, it all comes out, it all seems to come out from human logic. But and nevertheless, you have to have Kabbalah Sol on top of that. So Haman was specifically out against Torah Shabbat Peh because he figured, I'll bet like the Yavonim later, stick to logic. You don't need to recognize that it comes from the Eved.
It's a Tzedukim
all, yeah. So therefore, Oira refers to Torah Shabbat Peh because like Ur is Lashon Zachar, refers to Torah Shabbat Sav, and Oira, which comes from it, refers to Torah Shabbat Peh. In another place also, I think the Rebbe talks about the idea because Purim is the ultimate Esirus of the Lasasa, Kimu Mashakim Lukvar, so therefore Oira, because like we're talking about the level of Torah, which is like a mother that gives birth to more, like Oira in the feminine. Pasuk list, the 10 sons of Haman that were hanged, Ves Pashandasa Vagoma Aseres Pnei Haman. Amr of Adu de Binyafo, Aseres Pnei Haman, Vaseres Tzerachim Eminu Binishma Achas. The names of the 10 sons of Haman plus the word Aseres, you have to say them all in one breath. My time, Akula Bahadi Adori, Nafkun Shmasayo, because all of them, their souls left them, they all died at the exact same moment. So therefore, you have to say them in one breath. When they hang them, So we do that, of course. Tosfos points out, Lachchila, but yeah, but you're going to say if you don't do them in one breath. The Roger Trevor says an interesting. Yeah, okay, but an experienced Balkarita can do it. The Roger Trevor says an interesting idea. This is why he says, in many shuls, and this is Arminic as well, so we know everybody says the four psukim of Gula, Mordechai Yotza, and Ishuhudi, and so forth, but in many shuls, and this is Arminic also, everybody says the 10 sons of Haman together also. Why? That's not one of the psukim of Gula. He says that's based on our Gemara over here. Because, Mela, you can say you Yotza by hearing the Megillah from the Balkarita, okay, Shemaya Ka'ina. Shemaya Ka'ona can work as far as the words. It can't work as far as the requirement to say them in one breath. That every person has to do for themselves. So therefore, everybody has to say it for themselves in order to be Yotzeh.
That the Gula is going to happen just also in one breath.
Never heard of it, but no. Could be. And Amar Rabbi Yechman, Vav de Vaizasa Tzorach L'mimdecha B'Zekifa, the Vav of the word Vaizasa has to be stretched out vertically. Kumudio de Labrus, like the wooden pole that they use on the Labrus River. The Rashi explains what it means is the Labrus River was a shallow river that had a lot of rocks and whatnot in it. Actually, Rashi doesn't say it over here. He explains it in the Gemara in Bava Metzia that uses the same expression. Also, Rav Levick has a long explanation of the Kabbalah why Dr. the Gemara uses this expression in these two places. Anyway. the Labrus River was shallow and it had a lot of rocks and whatnot in it. So when they were when they're floating down the river or up the river, whatever, in a boat, they would need to use a pole to keep it away from the edges and to sound for rocks and whatever. A huge pole like that to be able to move the ship. That's a, you have to stretch out the bob like that huge pole. So what does that mean? Different Mepharshim have different explanations. One is you make it large, which is how we do in armagillas. Another explanation somebody has shown him say is that normally the top of a vav is more or less at right angles to the body of it. It goes like this. Here what you do is you bend the top of it a little more upward than it usually would be. And the third explanation is you stretch it out verbally when you say vayizasa. Either way, why? Yeah. Either way, my time. A kula b'chadz kifur is the kifur because they were all hanged on the one pole. The vav of vayizasa represents that pole. Yeah, the Targum actually says the Targum goes through the details of how the pole was 50 amas tall and a few amas, I think 10 amas of it was sunk into the ground, and they had Haman on the top 3 amas and Parshandasa on the next 3 and then Dolphin on the next 3, etc., with a space of 1 amas. Yeah, it describes how they're all one on top of the other. Yeah. Dorash Rav Shila ish Kfar Tamarta. Rav Shila from Kfar Tamarta said the following drasha. Kol ha-shiris kulon, all the shiris in Tanakh, nichtavis ariach agabe levena ulevena agabe ariach. They are written like a riach, which is a half brick, on top of levena, which is a whole brick. And levena agabe ariach. For example, think of how shiris hayam is written in the Sefer Torah. Mayevu lemer ashiru l'ashem ki gaga sus. V'roich v'roma v'yom. So you have like an alternating line, you have three groups of words and then two, and then three and then two. Yeah, it's like a brick wall with larger and smaller bricks. It's not just Oz Yashir, also, for example, the Shira of Devoda is written that way, the Shira of David that appears in Tillim, and one second. Chutz Mishira Zu, Umalte Knan, except for the Shira of the 10 sons of Haman, and the Shira of the kings of Knan, and in Sefer Yeshua, it lists the 31 kings of Knan that the Jewish people defeated. It also writes them in the same way as the 10 sons of Haman, Melech, whatever, Echad, etc., going through all the 31 cities. They're written, Shariach, Agabi, Ariach, Ulevena, Agabi, Ulevena. They are written a half brick on top of a half brick and a whole brick on top of a whole brick. Meaning, think of how the 10 sons of Haman are written in the Megillah. You have the names are all on top of each other in one column, and the Ve'eses and Aseres are in the other column. It's not going back and forth, 2 and 3 and 2 and 3 like that. My time is Shalaitet Kumalamapalosan, in order that there should not be a rising up from their downfall. What does that mean? Rashi says it means like this. If these things were written like a normal brick wall, then it would represent, okay, like the wall collapses, you rebuild it. Here, what we're saying is, there's no room underneath at the bottom of the column to stand on. You don't have legs to stand on. So like it collapses and the whole thing falls and then, so to speak, can't be rebuilt. The Ran quotes from Rabbi Natam a slightly different explanation that he says that this Ariach, Agabi Ariach, Levena, Agabi Levena means also that when you're writing these shiras, you're supposed to have each of the names should be the same length, and each of the Ve'eses and Aseres should be the same length. So that way it's like a brick wall that's cut off and there's no room, there's no brick sticking out to add any more to it to increase the size of the wall or something.
The more you grow down, the more you decrease the...
No, not the more you decrease, but you make them all at equal width. Lemaise, in many Megillahs, and in the Rebbe Maharash's Megillah, for example, the Sefer HaTorah, you have most of the names are indeed one width, except the Parshandasa is a little longer, so it sticks out a little. But all the other ones are about the same width, and all the S's are the same width also, of course. Because they were Rishayim. That's why the pasuk makes a point of mentioning them. That they called Chamesh Meitish, the Esesh says Bnei Haman, because they were the ringleaders over there. So we said yesterday that we had some of Haman's sons ended up begging. Some of them died of other causes. He had many more than just the 10 sons. We said. We said different opinions. 30 and 70 and 208, whatever. Yeah. Even those who were hanged. Yeah, they may have already had children for then. Yeah.
Possible.
They were there. Next, the king says to Queen Esther, "B'Shushan Abira Horugu Ayehudim." So Achashverosh starts telling us, Esther, in Shushan Abira they killed 500 people plus the 10 sons of Haman. He says, what must they have been doing in the other parts of the kingdom? But what else do you want? It's like the first half. It sounds like the first half of the pasuk sounds like he's angry about what's been going on over here. Like he's talking. You guys killed so many people. Then all of a sudden, he's like the second half of the pasuk. He's all of a sudden, what do you want? I'll do it for you. So what happened in between? And Rashi says also that the word is not Rashi. I think Marsha says that also because he's saying Hogu Ayhudim Ba'abed. He's implying like there's been a destruction over here. Like you guys are destroying my kingdom. And yet all of a sudden he says, "Amashay lost us being Asanach." So what happened? Malach came and slapped him on the mouth. So he started talking more gently. Next, afterwards, the pasuk says, "Vavoya l'kne Amalach," when she came before the king, "Amar ima sefer." He said, "With the sefer, with the scroll." What does that mean? Amar mi bayale. It should say she says that she said that with the scroll, the gzeder should be canceled. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, it means Amar Loi. Esther said to Achashverosh, "Yet Amar b'peh mashakasa the sefer." There should be said with your mouth what is written in the what's written in the scrolls, what's written in the letters. Meaning, Rashi says actually that Rashi doesn't have a girsa Amar Loi. Rashi says what it means is that the pasuk is saying what's written down in the Megillah has to be said verbally. The Megillah actually has to be read on Purim, which is what we do, of course. Omar ima sefer, that he said, meaning each bar chore, when they were laning, they're laning ima sefer, what it says from the sefer. It shouldn't just be on the shelf, it should actually be read on Purim. Other mafarshim who go say, the fact is we have our girsa over here, Omar Loi. It means Esther told the Hashverosh, don't just write it down in the letters and send them out. Verbally tell your courtiers and your servants and whatever that you agree to this, so they don't think maybe we're forging it, maybe whatever. They should know it's coming from you that you're overturning the gzeira. Not overturn, bypassing, whatever. And the pasuk says that the Megillah is Divrei Shalom ve'emes, words of peace and truth that Mordechai wrote. Or what does that mean? Amar Rav Tanchum v'Amar Rav Amila Amar Rav Asi Melamed Shetzricha Sirtur Ka'amita Shel Torah. We learn from this that the Megillah you have to score lines on the parchment, like the Sofrim take a stylus or whatever and then mark straight lines on the parchment so the writing will be straight, like the truth of the Torah. I mean, the Torah is called true. The Emes Tnei Baal Tzimkur, the Yerushalmi Kor Tzipasik. So therefore, we're saying the Megillah has to be like Divrei Shalom Ve'emes. It has to be like the words of truth. It has to be like the Torah, and has to have the lines made straight like that. In a few places in Shas, Tosfos discusses this and argues that no, a Sefer Torah does not in fact need Sirtur Tapi Alacha. So Tosfos explains, I think Rabbi Natam says over there in Tosfos, says that no, Amita Shel Torah actually means what it actually means the parashiyot that it says in Tefillin and Mezuzah. Those are called Amita Shel Torah in Mezuzah specifically. The parashiyos in the Mezuzah are called Amita Shel Torah because they're like the essence of the Torah, that we believe in one Eibishter, that we keep his mitzvahs, etc. So and a Mezuzah definitely needs Sirtur. So the Gemara is saying over here that according to that a Megillah needs Sirtur like a Mezuzah, not like a Sefer Torah. Because the Sefer Torah, according to that opinion, does not need Sirtur. The Maaseh Sofrim do all of them with Sirtur in order that they'll write straight lines. And the pasuk continues, "Mama Esther Kiyam." The word of Esther was kept. Now the Gemara understands this to mean that actually that Esther's word is what caused that there should be a nes of Purim. Question is, "Mama Esther Ein Divrei Atzmei Misloi." Was it only Esther's word, only Esther going to the king? What about all the fasting and everything that everybody did? That helps also. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, right? That's what the pasuk means. The previous pasuk ends with the word "Divrei Atzmei Misloi," that calls them the word of the fasting and the crying out. And the next pasuk continues with "Mama Esther Kiyam," and the word of so those two things together, the fasting that the Jewish people did and the words of Esther, Tachash Kedush, together Kiyam Es Yemei Purim Eila, that caused that there should be Yemei these days of Purim. She's the one who actually initiated the fast, right? But still, she needed the whole Jewish people along with her. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Yeah. Last pasuk in the Megillah says, "Ki Mordechai Yehudi Mishnah LaMelech Achashverosh." That Mordechai Yehudi is viceroy, prime minister to King Achashverosh. The Gadol Yehudim, and he's great among the Jewish people. V'rotzi L'Roiv Echad, and he's desired, he's wanted by the majority of his brothers. What does it mean? L'Roiv Echad V'lo L'Chol Echad, not to all his brothers. Malamet Shapirshim Menem Mitzvah Sanhedrin. From this we learn that part of the Sanhedrin separated themselves from Mordechai. They held that he should not be going into government service, basically, because as the Gemara is going to say now, Kamatorda is more important than that kind of. And the Mefarshim talk about that one idea of it is that they argued that now that of course it was a matter of pesuach nefesh up until now, so the mivatol hamon zera. Now that that's taken care of, there's no reason for you to be remaining as the king's viceroy. You should be going back to being Rosh Sanhedrin. He himself would have argued, yeah, that there was a possibility of more zera. After all, Hashem is still the same Rosh. Yeah.
But why would they suspect the same stuff?
No, the fact is he was Mishnah Malach Hashverish, and. And the Gemara is going to say in a second, actually, now that he went down in rank in the Sanhedrin because of it. But yeah, so I'll tell you that in a second. But I'll tell you there's an interesting sicha that Rebbe once talked about it about this idea that the Rebbe told a story over there that there was one time they were asking the one time in Riga they'd asked the Friedrich Rebbe and also the Rogachover to be on a committee for something that the Klal needed. I don't know whatever. The Rogachover said, I'm not so sure I should. Basically, he said it depends on a machlokas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. And he explains about the Chassidim or the Shonim spending time away from their learning in order to daven, whether Torah and Mishtameres, like Bavli says, that their Torah is preserved, they don't keep growing in Torah, but at least they don't forget what they already did, or Taros and Misbarechas, that their Torah is blessed, that they're able to learn for only a little amount of time, and they gain as much as they would have if they hadn't spent the time down.
Yeah, yeah.
The Rogachover says, basically, I'm concerned that what the Babli is saying is, what the Babli is saying is the way we should, that it's only Taros and Mishtameres, and I want it to be Misbarechas. So he didn't. So that I've explained that based on our Gemara over here, Mordechai and most of the Sanhedrin held the Yerushalmi, Teros and Misbareches, that yes, he can continue growing and learning even though he's involved in Avodah Saklal. Whereas the Mikteh Sanhedrin held according to the Bavli that no, it's Mishtameres. Okay, he won't forget what he learned, but he's not going to keep on growing greater either.
Yes.
And therefore they were Pirshu Menem.
And Yosef, the
Alpha Rebbe
also. Yeah,
you said No, I said the Friedrich Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe and the Rogachover.
Oh, okay.
The Friedrich Rebbe and the Rogachover. The Friedrich Rebbe did. The Rogachover didn't, I think, yeah. But, that's why the Roy Bechov, because most of them agreed that he's doing the right thing. A minority of them held that he's not. Yeah.
So what Mordechai does was okay.
According to most of the Sanhedrin, yes. But now, as Gemara points out, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Godel, Talmud Torah, Yosef, Atzalos, Nefashos. We see that learning Torah is greater than saving lives. Now, obviously, I mean, Pikuach Nefesh is Pikuach Nefesh, but what we mean is, if a person, if you have a person who doesn't have to be involved in Atzalos, Nefashos, because there's nothing of that going on, then he's better off learning, because otherwise he's going to lose his level. We see originally Mordechai is listed after four other members of the Sanhedrin, after four other leaders, and later on he's listed after five. What happens? The Psukim in Ezra and later on in Nehemiah, which originally was part of Ezra also, list they have a list of the Jewish people who came back to Eretz Yisrael. In Sefer Ezra, there's a list of the Jews who came back to Eretz Yisrael after Kodesh's proclamation to start building the second Beit Hamikdash. So it starts by listing the leaders, and then it starts listing the families and the total number of people. Later on, many years later, in the Nehemiah part of Ezra, it describes how as Nehemiah was looking through the old records, and he found that original document that described that Aliyah. This is now 20 odd years later, and he updated it basically based on there's a few names and a few numbers that are different in the second one versus the first one, because different families, people moved back, more people came, and people were born, etc. So there's a list in Ezra and there's a list in Nehemiah. The Ikra Ksiv in the list in Ezra, which is when they first came after Kodesh's proclamation, Ksiv Ashaborim Zerubbabel, the following people came with Zerubbabel to Eretz Yisrael: Yeshua, Nehemiah, Sroya, Re'elia, and Mordechai Bilshon. Bilshon was Mordechai's nickname because Baya Lishni. He knew how to mix up languages. He not only knew all the languages, but he knew how to, like, if a person is speaking partly in one language and partly in another, Mordechai could understand him. So we see he's number five on the list.
In Ezra.
In Ezra's time. Well, the Sefer later, or not really in Ezra, this is before Ezra himself came to Ezra, so I was going to describe that, but it's in Sefer Ezra. Well, the Sefer later on, when Nehemiah is updating the list, it says, Haboimim's Rebubble are Yeshua, Nehemiah, Azariah, Ra'amiah, Nachmani, so far you have five, and Mordechai Bilshon is number six. So he went down a level. First he was number five, now he's number six. So therefore, that's what we're saying, he went down because now during those 24 years, 20-odd years or whatever, he got involved in Atzalos Nefashos. He's now prime minister. So it shows that, yeah. Basically, yes, that's the idea. Or that, yeah, again, the other members of the Sanhedrin evidently figured that, you know what, now that the danger is over, he doesn't need to be prime minister. You know, he needs to be fine. You know, he needs to have an open hotline available to Achashverosh. He doesn't need to be, you know, constantly running the empire. Anyway. We see that also learning Torah is greater than rebuilding the Beis Mikdash. Because as long as Baruch ben Neriah, the Talmud of Yirmiyah, was still alive, Ezra did not leave him and come up to Eretz Yisrael. When we have that list of neither of those lists of people includes Ezra. The pasuk says that Ezra came to Eretz Yisrael a year after the second Beis Mikdash, after they finished building it. Why did he wait so long? Why didn't he come the first time, the second time? Because his Rebbe, Baruch ben Neriah, was still alive. Now, why didn't Baruch ben Neriah himself come? The Medrash says because he's old and weak, he couldn't make it. So as long as he's alive in Babel, Ezra didn't want to leave.
How can we say the delaying 1 second building the greater than learning Torah?
But that's what we're saying. In other words, that learning Torah is greater than that, and therefore.
Why? I mean, delaying the construction of the Beit HaMikdash is.
First of all, they could bring carbonus all that time. But second of all, what's the purpose of the Beis Mikdash? It's to bring the Shechina into the world. It's to have a place for the Shechina. And, you know, Talmud Torah accomplishes the same thing and more so. You know, so therefore, Talmud Torah is more important. That's what we're saying.
It also brings the Shechina.
That's what we're saying is more important. So therefore, as long as Ezra had his Rebbe, because that's how you bring down the Ebeshter into the world. That's how you
building
the Smith. Yeah. It's a particular mitzvah. Learning Torah is a Talmud Torah. Can I call him? Another one. Amar Rabba Amar Bitzchok Bashmo Bamarta. Gadol Talmud Torah Yosim Kibud Avayim. We shall see that also learning Torah is more important than Kibud Avayim. Shekol Oisin Shanim Shoya Yaakov Avinu Beveit Eva, because we see the whole 14 years, as we're going to show the calculation soon, that Yaakov was learning in the Yeshiva of Eva, Loinena, she wasn't punished for it, which now the Gemara is going to make the calculation. How we know that he was 14 years there, and how we know he wasn't punished for that. Wait. The Amamar, the Braitha says as follows, Lama Nimnu Shnoitz of Shoyishmal. Why is Yishmal's lifespan recorded in the Torah? The Torah says that Yishmal lived 137 years. Why? Rashi says he was a Rasha. Why? The Torah doesn't usually tell us how long a Rasha lived. Marsha says, okay, the Gemara mentioned Rav Abasa that he did Shuvah, but okay, still when he was younger he was a Rasha. Mainly you mentioned the years of a Tzaddik, but why of somebody who was a Rasha? It's in order to use it to calculate the years of Yaakov. It's as follows. Yishmael lived 137 years. Now Yishmael was 14 years older than Yitzchak. Abram was 86 when Yishmael was born. He was 100 when Yitzchak was born, so Yishmael was 14 years older. Yitzchak was 60 when Yaakov and Esav were born. So how old is Yishmael when Yaakov is born? Bar Shivan Bar Bar, he's 74 years old. Kama Paishin Mishnei, how much of his life is left? 137 minus 74. Shitin Utlas, 63. Vitania, and then we learn in another brisa. Hoya Yaakov Avinu B'shoshin Isbarach Ma'ovim Ben Shishin B'sholosh Shana. Yaakov, when he got the bracha from Yitzchak, was 63 years old. And it was around that time that Yishmael died. Why? It says at the end of Parshas Toldos, Esav saw what's going on over here, that Yitzchak had benched Yaakov, he sent him away to get a wife from Padan Aram. Esav realizes, you know what, all these years I'm married to these Canaanites, and Yitzchak and Rivka don't like it. So, what does it say? He goes to Yishmael, he figures this way I'll also marry in the family. I'll satisfy my parents. Although Rashi says he's still a Rasha for not divorcing the other ones. Anyway, now, Mimashma Shineva Bas Yishmael, any idea she Yachos Nevoyas? Now, if it says she's the daughter of Yishmael, of course, she's the sister of Nevoyas. The Pasuk at the end of Chayasara lists the 12 sons of Yishmael, and the first one on the list is Nevoyas. So, Malamat Shekitri Yishmael, it teaches us that Yishmael was Makadisher to Esav, Umes, but then he died, Vesian Nevoyas Achia. So her brother Nevoyas had to arrange the actual Hasana. When I was in seventh grade, and all I heard of Levi Bornstein was one of my teachers. He taught us this parsha with Mefarshim. He said very likely what happened is Yishmael realized what kind of son-in-law he's getting and had a heart attack. That Yishmael realized what kind of son-in-law he's getting in Esav, and he dropped dead. Anyway. So therefore, we see that Yishmael died very shortly after Yaakov received the brachas. If we say that Yishmael was, if we say that so therefore, it has to be that Yaakov was 63 when he got the brachas, and that's when Yishmael died. Next, Shittin Ritlas, the Arbeser Ad-Dimisyal Yosef. Now, then we know that 14 years passed from when Yaakov got to Haran until Yosef was born, because the pasuk says he worked for 7 years for Rachel and another 7 years for Leah, for what turned out to be for Leah, and another 7 years for Rachel, and then Yosef was born. Hashivin b'shiva. So far we would have he's 77 years old. Uchti v'Yosef and Shloshim Shana ba'avna lifnei Pare. It says that Yosef was 30 when he stood in front of Pare and became prime minister. So now we're up to Hamei b'sheva. We're up to Yaakov is 107 years old. Shev the Shiva, the Sava of a Tauti Jakaf. Now, 7 years past of the plenty in Mitzrayim, 2 years of the famine until Yaakov and his family came. So that's another nine. Homei of a Shitzar. So that's it. So far, we would calculate that Yaakov was 116. But, Uchtiv, Yemi Pare, Yaakov, Kama Yemeshne Chayecha, Pare asked Yaakov by their meeting, how old are you? By Yemi Yaakov, Pare, Yemeshne Megoresh, Shloshim, Ashrana. He says, I'm 130 years old. You're 130. May of a Shitzar have you. So far, you only have 116 accounted for. We have not counted the 14 years that he was in Beis Eder. He left home when he was 63, but then he went and learned in Beis Eder for 14 years. Then when he was 77, he went to Haran, and then from 77 to 84, he worked and then married Leah. From 84 to 91, he works and then he marries Rachel. He works another 7 years. When he's 91, Yosef is born. Yosef is 39 when Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim. There's your 130. That's how we see that he was there for 14 years. And Titania, in fact, we learn in a braisa, Hoya Yaakov Beis Eiver Mutman Abba Es Hashana, that Yaakov was hidden in the house of Eiver for 14 years. By the way, the reason why we say only Eiver, not Shem, is because Shem had already passed away. Shem passed away, according to the calculations in the Pesukim, and Noach, Shem passed away when Yaakov was 50 years old. At this point, when Yaakov goes to learn in the Mishmerish, only Eiver is alive. Eiver himself, the Seder Olam, says passed away 2 years after Yaakov left.
Shem passed away
years earlier. Yeah.
How many years?
Yaakov got there when he was 63. So Shem had passed away 13 years earlier. 13 years before the brachas, yeah. Now, so that's as far as the 14 years. And the Gemara continues. We have right here. Eva died 2 years after Yaakov left for Aram Naharaim. Yotze Misham, so Yaakov left the yeshiva, Obola Aram Naharaim. Nimtzek, Sha'amad Alaba'er, so it comes out when he stood by the well and met Rachel, then Shivim Besheva, Shana, he was 77, not 63. There's the 14 years. Okay, so now how do we know he wasn't punished for those 14 years? Titania, Nimtze Yosef Shapirish Ma'aviv Esther Shayim Shana. We find that Yosef was separated from Yaakov for 22 years. He was sold when he was 17. They met up again when Yosef was 39. Kishem Shapirish, Yaakov Avinu Ma'aviv, Diyakov plus Kishem Shapirish, Yaakov Avinu Ma'aviv, Diyakov. The same amount of time as Yaakov was separated from his father, from Yitzchak. And the question is, what do you mean? Tlos and Rashita Avim. According to the calculation, we just said he was away for 36 years. He left when he was 63. He returned when he's 90. He returned when he's 99. Ella, what it means is our base to have a base aver like Hashavlahu. We're not counting the 14 years that he was in base aver. Therefore, he was only punished by having Yosef taken away from 22 years, not 36. Okay, the Gemara asked, where do you get 22 years? So if the base love and Esther Shinin Havian. He was in love in the house for 20 years because after he worked for 7 and 7, and then that love and tells him stay on. I have brachas because of you, etc. He winds up staying for 6 more years. And he says afterwards to Laban, he says, I've been spending Hazeli Esther Shana Bavesacha. So I've spent 20 years. Where's the other 2 years? Ever Mishum de Ishtai Ba'urcha Tautin Shinin, because he also delayed 2 years coming home. The Tanya, Yotzame Aram Naraim, this is continuing from Seder Olam, that he left Aram Naraim, Bolo the Sukkos, but also Shem Shmoina also Chodesh, and he spent 18 months in the city of Sukkos. Shinem of Yaakov Nasan Sukkos, so the Pasuk says Yaakov went to Sukkos, Vayivan like Boris, and he built himself a house, Olamakneu also Sukkos, and for his cattle, for his animals, he made Sukkos. Rashi says you have like this, Sukkosa means Sukkos, Bayis is a house, Sukkos again means hut. You build huts in the summer, you build houses for the winter to live in because you need something substantial. So therefore we see he was there a winter, a summer, and a winter. Marsha says a little differently. The word Sukkos, the first part, is the name of the place, Sukkos. It means because the Pasuk says he said Sukkos, plural. So therefore it means he made two groups of Sukkos. One the first winter, one the second winter. So we see he was there for 18 months. Or Beisel, also Shisha Chadashim, and then he spent another 6 months in Beisel. Behikruv Zvachim, and he brought Korbanos over there. So therefore we have a total of 2 years. So therefore we have total 22 years until he got back home. Hadron Halach Megillah Nikris. Actually, if we can go on a few more minutes, we're very behind, actually. We really should be finished with Yizayim today, so we're not going to do all of Yizayim. We don't have time, but at least let's start it. I don't know. Mishnah says, HaKoreh Samagillah Mafreya, if a person reads Megillah backwards, lo yata. And there's a famous verse of the Baal Shem Tov on it, that it means also if you read the Megillah, like it's Mafreya, it's something back in the past, you're not Yotze, you haven't really accomplished what the Megillah is coming to tell you. Not Boba Mice, it's like you consider it ancient history. It happened, Not Boba Mice.
It has to be
consider it relevant. Kral Peh, if you read the Megillah by heart, Kral Targum, or if you read it in Targum, in Aramaic, or B'chol Lashon, or in any other language, lo yata. But you can read it for people who do not know Hebrew, who only know Lashon Laz, a foreign language, in Laz. And Gemara is going to point out, what do you mean? You just said if you read it in any Lashon, you're not Yotze. So the mission is contradictory. So we'll talk about that in Gemara. But lawyers, Shoshama Ashurit, a person who speaks a foreign language, who hears it in Hebrew, Yotze. Even if he doesn't understand. Continues the Mishnah, cross Serugin, if a person reads the Megillah piecemeal, like he reads a little bit and then pauses, and then reads some more and then pauses, or misnamnim, or he reads the Megillah when he's half asleep, yata.
Is the Yiddish considered
loud? Yeah. Yeah, sure. Not Hebrew. Hayakaitva, if a person is writing the Megillah, and as he's writing, he's reading, because he's supposed to say the words as he writes them, and the Gemara will explain, he has to be writing it from an already copied Megillah, because he has to read from a whole Megillah. So he has a whole Megillah in front of him, he's writing a new one. As he's writing, he says the words, by he, bimeach, hashverish, etc. Or dersha, he's darshaning the Megillah, he's saying each pasuk and darshaning it. Or umagiha, or he's proofreading a Megillah, and again, he's saying the words to himself. Im kivin libo, if he's mechaven, to be yotze the mitzvah, yotze, v'im lav lo yotze. Now, we had a discussion in Rosh Hashanah whether mitzvah tzrichas kavana or not, whether you actually need to have kavana in order to be yotze the mitzvah. How would the opinion that says you don't need kavana, how would it explain our Mishnah? We said there, because you could be talking about, for example, when you're kosva, dosha, or magia, not necessarily are you being careful to say the words properly. For example, when you're proofreading it, you might say the word like a different nekudas because you want to catch. You don't want to make a mistake and then have a vav there where they're not supposed to be or whatever. Or another possibility, some of Farshim say that actually when it comes to the Megillah, everybody agrees you need kavana because the whole point is Kirsum and Nissa. If you say it without having kavana, then you haven't accomplished that. If the Megillah was written with sam or basikra or bakomus or bakantantan, these are all different kinds of writing materials, but they're not black ink. Al niyor v'al diftera, or if it's written on paper, from iris actually, or on diftera, on unfinished parchment, lo yota, achtek sova ashuri, so it has to be written in ksav ashuri, al sefer, on a parchment scroll, or with doy and using black ink.
But you see, if you read somebody that only understands
Latin, and you read in Hebrew, you're still yes, he's still yes.
No, I'm saying is you have to read it.
So that's actually, there was a machloikus about that, whether it means that if you have a Megillah written in another language, does it mean it has to be written in Hebrew letters still, that you write, you transliterate it, and it was, etc., or does it mean maybe...
You have to translate as you go.
Yeah, no, you definitely can't translate, because then you'd be reading Baal Peh. No, there's no question it has to be written. So that's the question. Does it mean Ashuris means that it has to be in Hebrew writing no matter what? Or does it mean just that it has to be written in some kind of proper script? How do we know that if you read the Megillah backwards or out of order? Backwards doesn't really have to mean backwards, it just means out of order. How do we know? The pasuk says the Megillah has to be the way it's written according to its time. Just like the time can't be backwards, the time doesn't run backwards. The same thing, the writing can't be backwards either. Doesn't say anything about reading the Megillah. Now, the pasuk only is talking about doing the mitzvah supportim. So they're fine. The doing can't be backwards. How do you know anything about the reading? No, we get it from a different pasuk. These days are remembered and done. So we're making a hekesh between the remembering, which is reading the Megillah, and the doing. Just like the doing can't be done backwards, as we just said, because the same thing, the mentioning of it can't be backwards either. We learn in a braisa, v'chein b'halol, v'chein b'kriya shema v'tfilah. The same din applies to halol, that you have to say it in order, and kriya shema, and shemana esrei. Halol menolon, how do we know that din is true of halol? Rabba amad achtib mizrach shem hashad mavoyah, halol it says, from the rising of the sun until the setting, mehol shem hashem. The rising always happens before the setting. The sun never rises in the west and sets in the east. So the same thing, you can't do halal out of order. Rabbi Yosef Amar Zeh HaYoyim Asa Hashem. This is the day Hashem made again. Days always come in order. So does the halal have to be. Rabbi Yosef Amar Yehi Shem Hashem Avara. It should be the name of Hashem is what? Meaning Kava Yosef. It has to be the way it's written. From now and forever. Now comes before forever, so the same thing, halal has to be in order. Now I'll catch my head.